Good morning. Welcome to the Sunday, June 24th, 2018 edition of Waking Up, Freeing Ourselves from Work. The most recent draft of the PDF that holds the text for these shows is number 1107. Sisters and brothers, when I say that the global state is centralized and global, the global state being we, the global people's common adversary, and we have no other, perhaps I should clarify what I mean. Particularly as what we're presented with is the apparent attempt to secure much more tightly around us nation-state boxes as social structures of control, webs of obligation, as Bentham said, while creating apace supposed tensions between these states, which, perhaps to demonstrate the erraticism of the Trump tool and make us long without end for the quote-unquote stability of the good state parent, or perhaps to help us see our wooden heads too thick to keep track of such rapid developments? Which a friend, forgive, ally, which a foe, sorry, adversary, who knows, let alone make sense of them, or perhaps they're both. Both to demonstrate the erraticism of the Trump tool and make us long for the good daddy state. They shift from day to day, these tensions and geopolitical situations. With the installation of unapologetically authoritarian heads of state all over the globe, a staging of scene that conveys the sense of a decentralized set of state actors structured by global arrangements or agreements, which in the Marxist version of this story of our containment or subjection were at first largely market-driven, what our good three call the rules for capital accumulation, making it seem as if our subject status was just a matter of impersonal economic laws at work. The absence of society between us, a given, but which have now morphed, following wars of liberation from various forms of oppression inflicted by the big boy states under the hegemonic influence of the U.S., followed by the inevitable demise of the ideology of continuous capital accumulation, known as capitalism, into agreements between sovereign states is what it seems. Agreements structured by and through a process of negotiation between the leaders, resulting in the Plato tribes' ever popular spheres of influence or zones of a global order. But the reality is much more porous, shot full of holes. For them, there are no borders. Quote from our February 8, 2015 show, quoting anti-systemic movements by our good three, Terence K. Hopkins, Giovanni Arrighi, and Emmanuel Wallerstein. National liberation in segments of the capitalist world economy and the transformations it has affected in relations of rule and other social relations have altered the social structuring of the world historical accumulation of capital process. That much is historically evident and therefore theoretically to be taken into account. But it has not, these national wars of liberation, it has not eliminated the relational conditions through which the accumulation process occurs or operates. And precisely that world historical elimination of the relational conditions through which the accumulation of capital occurs, and I comment determined by non-state-specific actors representing for the global state. Now, how does that relate to political power? Continuing, the elimination of capital accumulation is what is entailed in the idea of class struggle. And I comment here again, the concept of class struggle bypasses, it seems to me, the question of how class is ended. Continuing, class struggle is the elimination of capital accumulation is what is entailed in the idea of the class struggle as the pivotal process in the transformation of the capitalist world economy into a socialist world order, which, unquote, which hopefully now we are seeing a new analysis on the horizon, but until we've been discussing Prince and the new vision for how we get to not the socialist world order, but freedom. The Marxist view then, to the degree Marx's name can be fairly appended to any analysis of our current situation, the product of events and actions Marx could not foresee, is that there is a world economy, the Marxist view, and then an array of states in hierarchical relation to each other, roughly corresponding to their economic power. Although place in the hierarchy is determined ultimately by political power, but by what mechanism or mechanisms? And so round and round we go. Political influence, place in the political hierarchy, accords with economic influence, and vice versa, but the relation between them remains fuzzy in the theory. But this seeming circularity is inherently dissatisfying to theoreticians. Recall our discussion of Terence Hopkins' observations on this question during our November 25th, 2012 show early on. He was trying to find some logic to what is in reality simple banditry. Quoting from that show, Terence Hopkins wrote about this whole issue of the relationship between individual state sovereignty and the world economic system. Basically, he says that there's no theory for the formation of states on a world scale in any way comparable to the theory of the accumulation of capital on a world scale. Terry Hopkins pointed out decades and decades ago that there were some fundamental contradictions that power can't solve. And I'm arguing that they can't solve them because fundamentally they can't. They are irresolvable because they believe that we are cattle. What they can't figure out is that their system is self-defeating. They can't stimulate patriotism and allegiance to the global economy simultaneously because the global economy is designed to create scarcity by eating and privatizing the earth. But then the cattle can't be herded. And then the drums of nationalism are then heard. Terry Hopkins wrote in his summary of the modern world system theory that there were contradictions in power's whole supremacy project. So he put his finger on the crux of the problem from power's point of view, and ultimately, the problem is us. Fundamentally, we aren't cattle, and we want to develop our gifts, and we want to live freely. Because Terry saw this quite clearly, that power's vulnerability lies firstly in that states want their sovereignty because the people they sit on will always want to be free. We push from below. We constantly, continuously push back against the walls, the limit of our captivity, until they fall. And that, a long series of quotes from Terry Hopkins, is included in Palmer's Chat. It's a webpage on the Nascent's website. As we take our earth back, a call to reclaim our earth, our thoughts, our minds. It is time. The result of this process of figuring out, Terry's process, is the collection of lectures titled Anti-Systemic Movements by Our Good Three. They concluded that any successful strategy for achieving our freedom has to be global, as it is the global arrangements put in place by the globally oriented state actors who define them which determine the boundaries within which we are allowed to live our lives. The problem is that some of the premises of our academicians are wrong, and so their analysis, to a degree, flawed. No solution to the problem of our containment can derive from it. As we've said, as long as we confine ourselves to the logic of class, we won't see the obvious path. Yes, our strategy is global. True, the state cannot be fixed. It is designed to constrict us. And in fact, it is on this intentionality behind the actions of the global statesmen, the fact that they are consciously engaged in a social and bioengineering project, that the biggest problem with our Good Three's analysis rests. For as the outer from the inner unfolds, and freedom is our birth gift from the infinite grown, these guys, the power guys, have for millennia known that for them to finesse its relinquishment, freedom's relinquishment, our minds' vast fields, our bodies, our souls, must be resown, lies seeded, and we conditioned to accept as real their theater. Still, in what sense can we legitimately call this reality they've given us a centralized global state when what we're talking about are staged global arrangements? It's centralized by having the same mechanisms driving it everywhere in the world. If every part of the world enforces their unstated, invisible rules, and this is a variation of the point made by de Tocqueville about the economy, which we discussed in Unpacking Democracy, and see the tools page to download it free, then the global players are left free to run the world like their personal fiefdom. The chief issue or problem from the power guy's perspective, consciously seen as such from Plato's day at least, was how to enforce its control globally. Once that is achieved, the specifics of language and religion and nation become irrelevant. The Plato's tribe throws so much confusion into our rich complexity, it's hard sometimes to stay focused on the obvious. They win by having a plan and rigging the game.